Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Social Flight Live. I'm Jeff Simon. We have a wonderful show for you this evening, honoring World War II pilot and Tuskegee Airman Lieutenant Colonel George Hardy. Before we get started, just a few things. Social Flight is booming with tens of thousands of aviation events and destinations. With the weather warming up across the country, flying is just happening everywhere, and I love going on and seeing all the different pancake breakfasts, fly-ins, educational events, car shows, air shows, everything that's happening all around. And you can find it all on socialflight.com. In addition to events, we also have destinations on there. We've got our Fly to Win Challenge. Now that is absolutely fantastic. We just gave away a Lightspeed Delta Zulu headset to Landon Whiteman of Justin, Texas. He won that and very, very excited for him. And now we are giving away an Aspen E5 electronic flight instrument glass for your panel, all here at Social Flight. Does not cost a thing. All you need to do is get the free Social Flight mobile app for Apple or Android devices, check in at your local airport, and you are entered in to win. That prize is going to be given away on August 1st. Check all of that out. And if you go to more airports, you get more points for everywhere that you go, and that just increases your chances to win. So please check out all of that, and you'll be entered to win that Aspen E5 instrument as well. In addition to that, and by the way, you do have to have an aircraft if you want to win that and have that installed. In addition to that, of course, we also have courses in our partnership with the FAA. You can get wings credits by watching those courses in Social Flight and taking a quick quiz at the end. If you're a technician, if you're a an aviation maintenance technician, then you can get be part of that awards program. And if you have an inspection authorization, or of course your IA does, be sure to let them know that they can get their continuing education at home on their own time, directly through Social Flight, completely free. We print out legal FAA certificates at the end of the courses, and we're just here to support general aviation. Tonight's broadcast is brought to you by Continental Aerospace Technologies, their amazing AVGAS aircraft engines, such as their IO 550 that we fly behind on our Bonanza, as well as their Jet A engines and PMA parts. Continental offers AVGAS and Jet A engines, such as what we talked about. And if you've seen me at any of the shows, you've also seen me visit and check out their brand new CD-170 that is their all-fuel, alternative fuel engine that can run on Jet A and is in the Technum P210. It's very, very cool. And they also have tons of education through their Aviation Technician Advanced Training Program. That's all available on Continental's website. So be sure to check them out and tell them thanks for supporting Social Flight, helping make all of this possible. Now to tonight's show. Lieutenant Colonel George Hardy is a remarkable individual and an American hero. I first met Colonel Hardy at Sun and Fun earlier this year, and I was struck by his confident presence, balanced by a kind soul, someone truly dedicated to inspiring the next generation. His story of joining the Army Air Corps in 1943 at the age of 17 years old, eager to join the war in defense of our country, is one shared by many young warriors at the time. But what sets Colonel Hardy's story apart is that as a young African-American man in the 1940s, his path to service, and in particular, becoming a fighter pilot, was only possible by him becoming part of the historic group of young men known as the Tuskegee Airmen. Colonel Hardy flew 21 combat missions over Germany in 1945, escorting bombers to their targets. And following the war, he returned to Tuskegee to pay it forward and train new pilots. In 1948, he rejoined another war effort, flying B-29 bombers in 45 combat missions over the Korean War in order to do continued support for our country. And he even went forward and fought again in the Vietnam War, flying 70 missions at the controls of a C-119K gunship, protecting troops on the ground. Colonel Hardy's decorations include the Distinguished Flying Cross with Valor, Air Medal with 11 oak leaf clusters, and a Commendation Medal with 1 oak leaf cluster. Unfortunately, we were just notified that Colonel Hardy was not feeling well enough this evening to join us and not up to making a live appearance here on the show. However, he is hoping to join us very soon in the near future. His dear friend and colleague, Dr. Joyce Spraggins, has graciously volunteered to join us this evening for a discussion that honors Colonel Hardy, shedding light on this amazing man and his story. So I hope you stick with us for this because it really, really is special. Dr. Spraggins is a recognized leader in education, public policy, and the promotion of STEM education programs. She speaks regularly about the history of the Tuskegee Airmen and Lieutenant George Hardy. So please welcome to Social Flight Live, Dr. Joy Spraggins. Hello, Joy. How are you this evening?
Good evening. How are you, Jeff? It's good to see you.
Thank you so much for taking the time this evening to join us and help us honor Colonel Hardy and also for everything that you do, because obviously I've talked about having you on the show yourself just to talk about all the amazing work that you are doing that supports people everywhere, including throughout aviation.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here tonight, and particularly when I have the opportunity to share with the audience about Lieutenant Colonel George Hardy and his extraordinary kindness, as you said, as well as his contribution that he's made towards his country. And so thank you for having us.
It really is spectacular. I'm going to bring up a picture here when I was able to meet him. Let me get that here. There we go. I'll tell you, it was truly a unique opportunity to get to meet him and to see. Again, it's fascinating. He is one guy that is with it at 99 years old, sharp as a tack, and truly kind, and looking to meet and inspire another generation. Tell me a little bit about your background with him.
Well, I had the pleasure of meeting him about 6 years ago, and he's actually from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and so am I. And we start talking about the importance of education, and he loves education, we both do, and the importance of also giving back. So I've been in workforce development for over 25 years. My passion has always been working with the military and veterans. All the men in my family are veterans, so meeting him and working with him has just been an extraordinary, not just for myself, but as we travel nationally and be able to speak to students, whether they are, you know, part of the Air Force Junior ROTC or the Civil Air Patrol or many of the National Tuskegee Airmen Inc. chapters. It's just amazing to come together, and particularly when we were in the audience working and talking with pilots.
Yeah, it is remarkable the impact. You know, the story which we're about to talk about is fascinating, and the impact resonates to today, and it resonates worldwide. I have to mention and also show this, that prior to the show, a gentleman sent a picture here, Peter Martinovich, who built himself a Vance RV-8. He's based at Jandakot Airport in Perth, just outside of Perth, Australia. Wow. And painted his aircraft honoring the Tuskegee Airmen, as you can see here in the paint scheme that he was able to research from that time. So it's not even just an American thing. It is a worldwide impact that this group had in showing what can be done, breaking barriers, and what the individuals were that it took to make that happen.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what they talked about was that they stayed focused to the mission. And the mission was being of service to our country and to make sure that their mission was successful, as well as protecting, you know, the bombers that were, you know, leading the wars. And that's what, you know, that's what he was about. He was always about being of service. So that was very kind of the gentleman to create that.
Yeah, certainly a labor of love when you think about what you do. That's a dedication that'll also last for years to come. So let's begin with Colonel Hardy here as a young man, and take me back in time and tell me a little bit about his story and what brought him to enlisting and to aviation in particular.
Okay. Well, he actually, again, he was raised in Philadelphia. He attended South Philadelphia High School, and he was very proud of that. And matter of fact, we still do work in the school that he attended. His passion was actually to be an engineer. That was his true passion. He proudly tells a story that when he came home, when he would come home from school, he would start working with his hands or taking the clock apart. And when his mother would see that, he would say, "Wait till your father gets home." And when his father came home, and he said, "I think he's going to be an engineer," and that inspired Colonel Hardy to really start saying, "Yes, that is one of my passions. I want to become an engineer." He was also very, very close to his brother. He adored his brother. His brother was the oldest, and there were seven in Lieutenant Colonel's family. And his brother actually joined the Navy. And Colonel Hardy wanted to follow behind him and join the Navy. And his father says, "No, you're not going to join the Navy." But he went and took the test anyway, and he passed the test. And when he went to go for his physical, they told him, "No, you don't qualify. You know, your wisdom teeth is not in." So he goes to his dentist and he goes, "Well, I guess I'm not going into the Navy because they said my wisdom teeth is not in." And he said, "It has nothing to do with your wisdom teeth. It has everything to do that you're African American." Mm-hmm. So that was the first, shock of aha, or when you start looking at racism. And so then he decided that, okay, well, then maybe I'll go and join, the Army. And so that's what he did. He took the test when he was 17, and they told him, "Once you turn 18, then come back and we'll give you your orders." And that's how it actually happened.
So, and yet he managed to basically join at 17.
Very proud. He'll tell you that, he trained, he got his pilot license before he received his driver's license.
Wow. And so he knew he wanted to fly early on then.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
So let's talk a little bit about tell me a little bit about the Tuskegee Airmen background and then how he came to join them.
Well, one of the, as I share with you, when he was proud to, join the Army, and then the squadron he joined was the Tuskegee Airmen. And there, they were individuals that really helped change the world. They were discriminated against, but they stuck together. They were very, very committed to making sure that they were focused on their mission. They had great leaders who believed in them. And one of the things that they always talked about is never leave a man, out there, to make sure that you stay focused to, your mission and, to move forward. And so they were very, very proud of that. And at the time, again, there was a lot of discrimination that was happening, but they were able to rise above that and be able to, be successful in all of the missions that they accomplished.
Did he talk to you about his training days with that group, what it was like to go out there and join that group?
Yes, he did talk about the mission. And matter of fact, he just turned 99, and on his birthday, there was a Daniel Keel who was actually in the class, one of his classmates, and they talked about, sharing the stories and, and the battles that they've been through and how they were very proud of accomplishments that they had. So the Tuskegee Airmen actually really overcame a lot of barriers, and that's how they made the contribution to this country that's, yep.
Are there some stories that come to mind that he told that you can relate to us?
I would say that a couple of things. When he actually He frequently travels and he talks about the Tuscany Airmen in his journey. One of the things that he did talk about was he talked about the flights that he was prepared to train on. And at one time they told him, no, you couldn't fly. And they had someone else to substitute him. And that kind of really bothered him. But when he looked back on it, he said that that was the day he really learned about the humbleness, because when that plane went up, he wasn't meant to be on that plane, on that mission. But the missions that he did achieve throughout the different wars that he, you know, served in is historic.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit more about his time during World War II. He flew a number of different aircraft. He originally trained on the P-47. We've got a photo of not his particular one, but I'll show that here so people can see. This is one that was actually a part of a contest won by the Tuskegee Airmen, but it is the P-47 that similar to the one that he actually flew with. And he then went from the P-47 directly into the P-51. And it was kind of interesting about his background that he did all this training, and then as soon as it was time to start escorting bombers, he was in the P-51D, which is pretty wild, pretty interesting to jump between them, especially in battle.
Yes, exactly. He did fly for, the single engine planes and with the P-40, the P-47, the P-50, and then his favorite is the, PD, the 51 Mustang. And so when you look at all of the different trainings, it goes back to the history, because the name the Tuskegee Airmen was taken from the most important of their training at the Tuskegee Army Airfield, but there were still other four airfields that they also was trained on. And so all of the Tuskegee Airmen of Alabama, their areas was chosen from a number of reasons: for good flying, weather, rural land, there were so many large cities filled with racial tension that mm-hmm. they were still able to continue on with their training so that, they could be successful in their missions.
Because it was separate from where a lot of the issues that they would have to be essentially kind of somewhere isolated where they could Absolutely. Go about their training and
yeah, and because in the 1940s, the U.S. military, like so many of our nations, they segregated blacks, were prohibited. We were prohibited from, entering the public places, including libraries, restaurants, theaters. One of the things that he does talk about that has was a eye-opener for him is that when he was actually traveling on the train to one of the missions, they had him, sit in the back. There was only a few of the pilots, but to sit in the back, and then they drew the curtain on the plane so that the white folks that were in front of him did not see that there were African Americans aboard the train. And he said to this day that that was one of the most shocking, mm-hmm. that was his first moment of really understanding, the impact of segregation. So he does talk about that.
One of the interesting things that is, you come out of this world when you look at the history of the Tuskegee Airmen and many of the people who have faced this, and there's some type of a corollary also with WASP, the women's air service pilots, the female pilots of World War II, which had a similar thing. They were able within their own world to have their training and serve at a very, very high level and then be recognized for that. But then ultimately, when that service ends at the end of the war in this case, and they go back, you have this re-entry to a completely different world without the respect that has been earned in service.
Or recognition.
Yes, or recognition, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Were there any stories about that or anything that you can relay about his experience in there?
Well, one of the things, I did have a chance to meet several women who served in that role. And they also talked about when they, you know, came back, how they weren't really recognized. And that's the same thing that the Tuskegee Airmen experience. You go over there, you know, you're fighting, you're defending your country, you're dealing with racism on two fronts, you know, in the wars that you're fighting in the military, and then you come home and then you experience continued racism. And I think that was a surprise to both and for all the service that they did in protecting our country. And Colonel Hardy will tell you that this is my country too. Mm-hmm. But the racism that they both experienced when they returned, it really had an impact on everyone. And yeah. When you look at where we are today, when we talk about diversity and inclusion, it's really important that we do capture our history, that we do preserve their history, because we need to share that with each generation.
Yeah. You
know, on the shoulders that we stand on are these great men who have sacrificed their life, you know, sacrificed, you know, being with their families, and just really spending time, you know, with their families when they had to actually, you know, focus on serving our country. And so there's a lot of sacrifice there.
Has he talked to you much about his time in Italy in World War II and what it was like to be a soldier over in Italy?
Well, he has, but I think that he will be best to share that about his experience there. It's one, you know, I'm honored to be here today, but when you hear it from him, I
yes.
mean, he will put you in that moment. So, and he is looking forward to, you know, being on the show in the next, you know, shortly. But I really, when it comes to those types of stories, I really think the impact comes from him. Yes.
Yeah. One of the interesting things is following his service in World War II, he basically stepped out of the cockpit, spent a lot of time in his career at that point in both pursuing education and getting his bachelor's of science degree in engineering, electrical engineering, where his goal was to do at some point, and also really specializing on these things like focusing on radar and long range navigation. And he was a very, very technical individual by nature, not just what we think of as kind of traditional, you know, good stick in the cockpit.
But he was very forward thinking, because he said, you know, when he returns back, like, what happens if I am not a pilot? What will I do then? And so he was able to really to look at exactly, you know, as you were sharing, you know, the radar was very, you know, was coming on, you know, with the planes. And he, again, was always curious and good with his hands. Mm-hmm. And so he went on to, you know, pursue that degree. And matter of fact, of the students that we are mentoring today in his honor are actually students that are engineers, as well as students that are learning how to build radars.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, what he's doing in foundation work. In that, it is very interesting, you know, at the time, those were fast-moving technologies and emerging technologies, and he had the foresight to see that getting involved in technology and getting as much of that education from the Army, and at this point it had the Army Air Corps, was now the Air Force, as possible was, you know, really important. And that he did that all the way up to 1949. So we look at him being in the war toward, in, you know, 45 And then by 49, he's really developing his education in that regard before then being put back into the cockpit. Tell me about how he talks about the differences between World War II and then being a pilot again now in the Korean War.
Well, you think back that many people didn't believe that African Americans were even capable of flying and was not able to perform well in combat. And so, you know, this came, one of the things that we look at is this came as a result of the 1925 study conducted by the Army, you know, college by saying, you know, African Americans pilots cannot fly, they cannot perform their duties. And so when you look at the different wars that he actually, you know, performed in, they were always excellent. And they were all, and matter of fact, everyone always said they always look forward to seeing the red tails because they knew when they would see the red tails that they would be protected. So I think that when you look at the different wars, there still was a common theme of making sure that, you know, you don't leave your pilots, you stay with everyone, and you make sure that you be successful in your mission.
I think it's an interesting thing that is a common thread to many people that I've interviewed, many areas of history that we've talked about, where when someone or a group of people have to overcome dramatic adversity in one way or another, whether it be a prejudice or just whether it be challenges or whether it be poverty, whatever it is, if they have to push that hard to get through it, in you also drive an incredible level of excellence that seems to be very difficult to generate in many cases in a world without that kind of adversity. And again, I'm not just talking about race. It's anything where you're struggling against such difficult odds and persevering against it, you wind up being, as you described, the final product of that fighter squadron of the Tuskegee Airmen are exactly what all the bombers want to see come by, because if you've overcome the challenges you've overcome, chances are you're the best it's going to be, and having made it to that point.
Absolutely. And if you think about today, with the pilots that we have and also the shortage of pilots, you know, that's in the industry, we want to be able to make sure that we transfer that knowledge of excellence and that perseverance. That was all they always taught. They had pride, you know, perseverance. And I don't often ask Colonel Hardy this, and I said, were you ever afraid, or did you ever think that, you know, you may not make it? He said, no, that's not how we think. We think that we go in with excellence in the mindset, we're going to be successful, and that's the only thing that we see, and that's the only focus that we have. And you think about that, you know, again, as you're experiencing all the different challenges, you're still learning as you're still flying, you're still defending your country, it's still experiencing racism, and yet your mindset is against all odds, you're going to keep moving in a spirit of excellence. That in itself is history. And that's what the Tuskegee Airmen has all been known about. One of the things that I take great pride in is when you see them come together and share that history and share that, you know, that camaraderie, and people come up to them and say, thank you. You know, my uncle, you saved my uncle, or thank you for your contribution. It's a heartfelt both ways. Yeah. And when you hear Colonel Hardy, you know, speak to the students, or, you know, or he'll be in a room and speak to, you know, military officers that are following, you know, in his footsteps, you can always sense the pride in the room.
Yeah.
And the determination.
I think it's an interesting point that I feel pretty passionate about with the individuals I've met that have broken barriers like that, what it represents is never a compromise of standards in the interest of diversity. It's opening up to other groups that have not been included in the past, finding the best in there that allow you to have a essentially more absolutely outstanding performers. That's what the WASP, that's what the Tuskegee Airmen, that's what the first astronauts to break these barriers, that's what it all represents. None of them are people where it's like, oh, well, there was someone, you know, there's someone much, much better. We just made a decision to do this and compromise. Instead, these folks were absolute like rock stars of what they did.
Top notch. And that's, yeah. And you bring up a great point.
And that's something I want to talk about, because that's something that Colonel Hardy has expressed that he believes very strongly in not using diversity and the goals of diversity to lower standards, but instead to have a larger pool of excellence from which to choose from. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, and this is a great topic, because when we talk about the Tuskegee Airmen, they truly represent diversity and inclusion in the military. Mm-hmm. And when you look at their standard of excellence, it was no, as you said, there was no, it was not even in their thought process or in their training. They always train excellence in a model of excellence. So when it came to, as you said, diversity inclusion expands. It does not reduce standards. And sometimes our mindset in this country, it still exists that you're looking at diversity, you know, it's a diversity of thought. It's a diversity of excellence, you know, and it's expanding the pool to make sure that we are reaching top notch,
right?
In the industry, in the aviation industry, well, in the best
of jobs. To be fair, it can be implemented improperly and where you are lowering standards. But I think for what was done in the history and these folks with the Tuskegee Airmen that we are celebrating, and to the credit of many of the other people that we've had on the show that have broken barriers, it's a different form. It's a different thing. And I think it's incredibly important to recognize that difference, that we're not defending anything that lowers standards or lowers quality of who's chosen for things. Instead, we're looking at what happens when you break barriers. And in order to break those barriers, you raise the standards, because the people who have to overcome those barriers cannot be the same as the people who are in those positions already. And already they can't be. They have to be better. Every person who has been was in the WASPs, every person who has broken barriers getting into space, they could never have made it with the same performance as people who are already allowed to be in those roles. They had to be far better. And I think that at the end of the day, you wind up with better people if you follow that approach.
Absolutely. And I want to share with you another diversity inclusion model of excellence. Back on April the 3rd, 1939, President Roosevelt, he approved Public Law 18, which provided for an expansion of the Army Air Corps. And one section of the law offered hope for those African Americans who wanted to advance, in the military, in their military careers, and, beyond, the regular jobs. And so there were six HBCUs that were selected to provide, pilot training. You have Delaware State University in Dover, Delaware, which today has one of the premier College of Aviation programs. You had Tuskegee Institute you know, known today as Tuskegee University. They still, you know, all of these colleges, these six HBCUs, are still a model of excellence. And now those schools, it was Delaware State, Tuskegee University, Hampton, Howard, North Carolina, A&T, and then West Virginia State College Institute. At these schools, even when you had the military training and at these HBCUs, they always model a state of, you know, mindset of excellence and advancement. And that again talks about the diversity and inclusion when we're expanding the pool so that, you know, whether they choose, individuals choose to be a pilot in the military or in the private, you know, private sector, they still represent the best and have mentors that still serve as mentors from the Tuskegee Airmen. Yeah. They carry on that legacy of excellence. So I just wanted to share that when we talk about diversity and inclusion.
No, that's wonderful. And that was Mary McLeod Bethune, right?
Well, Mary McLeod Bethune, she played a major role. She was very close to Eleanor Roosevelt. And so she was actually, you know, in the White House as the African-American advisor. So she kind of helped shape the law and legislation to make sure that HBCUs was included in that.
And in the Tuskegee program. Yeah.
The Tuskegee program.
That's wonderful. During the Korean War, he went back to the cockpit, and Colonel Hardy became a bomber pilot as opposed to a fighter pilot, flying the B-29s. And he does tell a story that was, unless I'm confusing something, that was the time where, even having served and been a fighter pilot successfully and with such a record in World War II, and now serving again, that there was at least one airman in particular that wouldn't fly with him because of the color of his skin. And that happened now we're all the way fast forward into Korea. Tell me a little bit about what you know about that.
Well, as you said, the pilot did not want to fly with him because the color of his skin. And that goes back to share, that's one example that even though he's accomplished and has fought in several, you know, all three, you know, wars, there still were people who, you know, were very prejudiced and did not feel comfortable and refused to fly. So it goes back to the racism that was still in the military, that was still present, even though, you know, Colonel Hardy and his peers, the Tuskegee Airmen, you know, were at the top of their, the top of the game.
I'm certainly looking forward to when he can be here in person, because he did mention he want to talk about how that relationship changed. And how they actually came to admire each other following that.
Yes, so that was one of one where he was actually going to, you know, fly, and then as he was heading towards the plane, you know, that's when they said, "No, you're not going to go, you know, on this flight mission." And at the end, he was very angry about that. But at the end, there was a level of respect that they both grew to have for each other and with each other. So that was a lesson learned for both.
Yes. So spanning three wars, whether or not they are currently referred to as wars, we get to the Vietnam War. And here you have him now flying a plane I wasn't even that familiar with, the C-119K gunship, protecting soldiers on the ground and taking out targets, flying now again in battle in the Vietnam War. And I mean, this is that aircraft in action. I mean, that is a long way from a Mustang. So And then he went from that eventually to his last aircraft that he flew, the B-36. Has he talked to you about his time in Vietnam?
No, I haven't. He has shared stories, but again, when it comes to talking about the history and the stories that were in, that's very impactful, I really am looking forward to him being here and sharing that with the audience firstly, because it's different when I share it and it's different when he shares it, because again, he takes you right in that moment, you know?
Yes.
So
yeah, we'll definitely get him on. That would be truly, truly wonderful. So I'd like to talk a little bit about what he's doing these days. And he, as you've mentioned, has a George Hardy scholar and mentorship program. Tell me a little bit about his kind of efforts to pay it forward, which is also how I was introduced to him.
Excellent. Well, he is an educator. He always liked to be in school, and he wants to definitely pay it forward and wants to be able to share that with the next generation. And so that's what we formed Legacy Bridges STEM Academy, Inc., known as Legacy Bridges, Lieutenant Colonel George Hardy Scholar and Mentorship Program. He actually, for his birthday, I'll just give a brief example. He just turned 99, and on his birthday, she was elementary school. Now she's going into middle school. So she was so excited when she saw him. So I said to her, "How did you meet him?" And she says, "Oh, he used to read to me." I said, "Really?" She said, "Yes, every week he would come to the church and he would read." And I just thought that was so amazing, because that's a part of his service. That's a lot, you know, we talk about the contributions that he makes, you know, made in the military and all of, you know, the history that he has there. But the spirit of Lieutenant Colonel Hardy has always been about family and about giving back. I'll give you another example. We met, we had the pleasure of meeting a young man he just graduated from Georgia Tech, and now he's a George Hardy scholar. And, you know, from the Civil Air Patrol to the Junior ROTC, and it was amazing when you see the multiple generations talk to one another. So they are engaging, and you can just see the mentorship going back and forth, you know. And so this is what's really important, is that we only, you know, not only does he pay it forward, we want to make sure that we help prepare, you know, the next generation. And I do have to share this. Every Friday, he dedicates himself to his church, and he actually goes, and they have a food pantry, and he is there putting packages together to help feed families.
Wow.
And again, I mean, he is faithful. He's
99 years old.
99 years old. He has not missed a Friday. He would tell you, "You can call me on Saturday, but Friday, I'm not available," because he is about service and giving back. And that is the spirit of who Lieutenant Colonel George Hardy is. So we started we have a program in his name, in his honor, at the Philadelphia Navy Yard. And we chose the Philadelphia Navy Yard because the school that he went to, the high school, is only 15 minutes away. And again, his brother was in the Navy. And that would, you know, he loved his brother so much. So we put our STEM program there in his name and honor. So not only are we working with the Air Force, but we also are working with the Navy. And then at the Air Force Sergeant Association, where we're located in Maryland, we're connecting the next generation in early professional careers. And most of them have their pilot license, and they're very proud of that.
Wow. That's absolutely fantastic. And so fantastic. And I also want to issue a quick correction, since we had a question come in that actually Colonel Hardy flew the B-36 in 1952 prior to the 119. That was a mistake on my part in terms of order, but lots of different aircraft in many different theaters of war. So tell me a little bit as we approach the end of our hour about what you are doing now, and because you're doing quite a bit of interesting work yourself with STEM programs and youth.
Well, my passion again is to share and carry forth his legacy, and that's what's really important to me. When you meet a man that of his integrity and love for his country and love for his family and the values that he shares, I feel very, very honored for him to be my mentor. I'm still learning every day. And when I talk to him, every day that I talk to him, I learn something new about him. He'll tell a new story, and he's just amazing. So I'm glad that you had the opportunity to meet him. And I'm really, really looking forward to your audience getting to meet him. And we really also want to thank, Social Flight, Live for having him, on.
Absolutely. We definitely look forward to it.
Here in spirit, he is here. And I'm looking forward to him sharing all of his experience, so people can really understand not only what Lieutenant Colonel Hardy went through, but also the spirit of the Tuskegee Airmen. And while we're all, why we are all committed to make sure, you have wonderful Florida chapters, Tuskegee Airmen, we're all committed to making sure that his legacy is carried forth.
Absolutely. And for those of anyone who is able to get out there to the World War II Museum in New Orleans, there's a very special exhibit. And this is him and you live next to a different version of him. Tell me about this before we end our hour.
I said to him, oh my goodness, there's now two of you. What happened? Yes, the National World War II Museum, they have a new exhibit, Malcolm Forbes, which is a rare gallery, and it's featuring Voices from the Front, which features Lieutenant Colonel George Hardy. So if you do go and you push the button, he actually will start talking, and it's you're looking and you think that it's him, but he actually was last year. He went to was invited to go to Hollywood, and they put this whole AI model together so that will help preserve his legacy, and then also share the legacy. And that's why they call it the Voices from the Front. So we do encourage everyone to please visit the museum. We are going to Legacy Bridges. We are actually going to carry forth an education program to make sure that all of the communities really get to have a chance to experience AI Voices from the Front featuring Lieutenant Colonel George Hardy. It is a wonderful exhibit.
That is truly, truly wonderful. So that is wonderful. Thank you so much, Dr. Joy, for taking time to join us and to helping us honor Lieutenant Colonel George Hardy when he wasn't able to be here live. And I hope we'll also see you again soon, and that we'll be able to, he'll be feeling up to joining us on another show very, very soon.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. It's my honor to be here. And thank you for what you're doing, because it's important that we are reaching out to the audience and the pilots that are current and then our future pilots. So we want to thank you and your Social Flight Live for your contribution of preserving the legacy of Lieutenant Colonel George Hardy and all of the Tuskegee Airmen. So thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, and have a wonderful evening.
Okay, you too. Alrighty.
Bye. And thank all of you for joining us and taking time out of your evening here on Social Flight Live. We're off next week, but back on Tuesday, June 25th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, as always, with legendary astronaut Story Musgrave. I'll tell you, if there is someone that you need to do a quick Google search on, it is Story Musgrave. This gentleman is spectacular. spectacular. Be sure to check this out. Very, very legendary gentleman throughout many eras of the space program, and definitely someone you're going to want to hear from and learn a little bit about. Until next time, I'm Jeff Simon for Social Flight, and I wish you all blue skies.